Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am your only host for the night, because for the first time in forever, Andy is indisposed. It is his birthday, and his family has surprised him with things. So he was like, dude, can't record. And I said, you know what, man? I got this. Me and Patrick got this. You are listening to the Dual Screens Podcast. And with me this week, for the third time as a interview, but the fourth time you've been on any of our shows, you have been on Nintendo Dual Screens, you have been on Dual Screens Podcast twice, and you have been on, well, now this would be twice, and you have also been on Dual Screens Versus. It's Patrick Hickey Jr., probably, if not the hardest working man you'll ever meet. He is the brilliant mind behind the Minds Behind the Games books. His new book, The Minds Behind the Sports Games, is out right now, and we are here to talk all about it. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Happy to be here. This is my favorite podcast to be on. So, so I've been on so many freaking podcasts over the last 3 years, and I've been on a couple more than once, but four times only you guys. So,
and there'll be more, because you keep churning out these books and you keep making us want to ask you things. So
try it.
For those that are new to the Dual Screens Podcast, this is an interview show. Now listen here, okay? This is the world's number one indie developer interview podcast, probably. But this week, we're interviewing a man who has interviewed more devs than we can even count at this point. This show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including Podbean, which is our home, and across everything. I'm talking everything. Apple Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. It helps the show out tremendously. And if you're watching the show right now, on youtube.com/dualscreenstv, please hit the subscribe button, leave a comment, hit the little notification bell, maybe a little thumbs up and all that fun stuff. Patrick, you've been doing this stuff for a long time, and there's a lot of information about your career out there. You've done dozens and dozens of podcasts. You've written interviews, articles. I mean, information about you is all over the place. So I don't want to go back into like that kind of stuff. I want to focus more on your current game, your current book rather. The Minds Behind the Sports Books, sports games. Sorry, I'm all fucked up because like. I'm all whatever. I want to focus on that, but I also want to focus on what's coming next. Not necessarily that you would be announcing it, but I kind of want to see where your mind is going and what things have been leading you. The leash has been taking, what journey you've been going on recently. But first, before we do that,
don't say journey, because now I'm going to have Separate Ways stuck in my head the rest of the day.
Oh no!
You're going to be playing air keyboard. But yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
For those who don't know what your books are, they are very unique. They're not just a collection of information. They're not one story. They're very unique. Why don't you tell our listeners, if they haven't picked up your books yet, what are the Minds Behind the Games?
So the Minds Behind the Games is essentially a interview anthology collection. Each book is an interview anthology. Meaning each chapter is dedicated usually to one person, sometimes two, sometimes three. In the case of an upcoming book, I have five people, but it's basically the story behind one game and one person or two people's, their story of their involvement in the game, whether it be the creator, the programmer, the level designer, sometimes the producer, all sorts of people and their relationship with the game, the role they played on the game, the role the game played on their life, how they broke into the industry. So it's basically that. It's not in a Q&A style. It's written by a journalist that's been in the video game industry, writing about the video game industry for 15 years, that's also an avid collector that has over 3,000 games across 30 consoles, that has written about the industry, like I said, for 15 years, that has reviewed hundreds of games.
Right.
You know, and that someone that's also now a voice actor in the video game industry, a story editor in the industry, a writer in the industry. So, and it's void of as much opinion as humanly possible. So my writing is in the beginning of each chapter, creating the context for which historically where the game stands in terms of its legacy. Then after that, I'm essentially writing transitions and filling in some of the gaps in the story for the reader, But then the rest is me allowing the source to tell their story. So it's not one of these books where it's, oh, my favorite games, these are why these are my favorite games. Or it's not, because there's a couple of great interview style video game books that are out, and I won't reveal the names, you could find them yourself, where it's like they're all in Q&A style,
Right.
and it's like the same questions for every interview.
Yeah.
So it's like, where's the fun in that, you know? So I wanted to take readers on a fun journey for each game, and each game has its own story. So I'm currently finishing the Minds Behind the Sega Genesis games, and I'm like 85% finished with the Minds Behind the Sony PlayStation games, and those are my fifth and sixth books. I currently have the Minds Behind the games, which was released in April of 2018. Then the Minds Behind Adventure Games, which came out in December of 2019, and the Minds Behind the Sports Games, which came out in like 2 weeks ago, and then the Minds Behind the Shooter Games is like a December or January release of this year. So that's how my books are different from a lot of the other video game books out there. It's a journalist interviewing video game devs and having them tell the story. Some of them are fun, some of them are not so fun. But it's just like, if you want to be a game developer, they're a great asset to kind of give you the foresight to kind of what to expect in a career in video game development. If you're a video game nut and you want to know stuff that's not online and stuff that's not on a Reddit AMA, it's a great read. So that's kind of been like where I've been going, to try and tell the untold stories of the video game industry.
So one of the things that always intrigued me about it, or I all things I've wondered about your process. Do you research enough where you know that there is a story, a specific story you're trying to get out of some people, or is it really just you kind of asking some general questions and then you kind of they lead you to a story that you then pursue for the chapter?
It's a little bit of both. When I started doing this, I kind of had in the back of my head, I wanted to write books that I could tell my journalism students, that I followed all of the rules that I tell them to follow when they write articles. Like, have an idea, like, have an angle for your story, and that's how you get in the door. But then you allow your source to talk enough, and sometimes what they give you is so good that your angle changes. So it's
Right.
like researching enough to know that there's a story there, but then also asking enough questions, doing enough research, understanding enough about their game and them as a person that you can get them to tell you that, get you to get them, I can't speak English, I'm an English professor. You can get them to tell you something that they haven't told anyone else.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, there have been some games where I'm like, and this was in the beginning, like in the Minds Behind the Games, there's a couple of indie games in there, like Squids, where I love that game. And I thought that game did things that, like, no iPhone game I had ever played before had done. And then when it got released on the 3DS and the Switch, I was just like, yeah, these are guys that deserve an opportunity to tell their story. And people have told me that they've enjoyed that chapter, so I kind of lucked out. But it's been kind of like, what games need their story told? Yeah, so I try and pursue one cult games that people care about that there's not that much information on. Classics where I can get like a nugget of information that isn't found anywhere else, but then also indie games that I think people should know about. So it's like perfect example for the Minds Behind the Shooter games, you actually helped me get a wonderful shooting game in the book. You introduced me to a developer that we ended up getting in the Minds Behind the Shooter games. You remember that game, right?
Probably. I don't remember setting this up, but that's just because my brain is mush, but I'm sure.
Ooh. So, come on. I'll give you a hint. It's like a really sexy Doom clone.
Oh,
So like a.
right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Great
So
game.
you
Great
could
game.
tell them the name.
So we're talking
Go
about
ahead.
Dusk? Or is that which one we're
Yes.
talking about? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Good
Yes.
dude.
So yeah, Dusk is great. So, but that's a game where I feel like if you're a young indie developer, you need to know that guy's story.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yes, absolutely.
But then the thing is too, if you're a retro gamer that you love first person shooters and you're just like so sick of like Call of Duty and like all like the big name first person shooters and you want to try something different, Dusk is perfect for that too. So it's like, so I want to I want to help people nerd out, but then at the same time, I want people to like read a chapter of a game they've never played and then go, yeah, I want to play that now. Or reconnect with a game that they used to love and look at it in a completely different way. Or connect with a game they thought was shit and now have a different appreciation for it and play it again. So that's kind of like, that's what I try and do in my reporting process.
I mean, it's pretty fascinating because I mean there's an infinite pool of games that you could find and pull from, and when you think about even your collector and your knowledge of the industry, there are games that even you don't know about, right? Like
Oh,
there's
yeah.
that's just gonna happen. It's just we don't have the ability to know everything, to know everybody, to dip our toes in every. And I asked you before we went on, like. I've been working so much lately on dual screens, on doing these interviews, on streaming, and also my 9 to 5 that like I no longer game for my pleasure and fun. Like I
Son
game.
of a bitch. I have that song now. I'm going to have that song stuck in my head. But Dolly Parton in the 80s is pretty hot, so it's like
It's okay. It's a good song. It's a good bop, as the kids say.
working 9 to 5.
But what I was saying was like now I'm starting to kind of slip from the zeitgeist a little bit. Like I'm starting things are starting to come around. I'm like, fuck, that game came out. Like that came out last year. Like we were talking
Oh,
about
yeah.
GTFO the other day, and you know, I had my eyes on that game and then like just lost it because I was so focused on indie games and the smaller games and playing as many of them as I can because like that's what we like to cover on dual screens that like that game just kind of came and went, and I'm like, shit, that game looked awesome. How do you see yourself kind of making this balance? Are you just kind of all in now on doing the mines, or are you gonna like, I mean, you got a brand new little baby boy over there. Like you're just kind of, your life is kind of moving along here. Like what's your plan for, are you, do you care? Do you even care to play the new stuff? Are you excited for next gen? Like everything's kind of right around the corner.
Yeah, I'm super excited for next gen. I just did a podcast with Robert Geronimo. He's this really talented comic book artist that I met at a Comic Con, and we got connected, and we've been talking ever since. So I've been on his podcast a couple of times, and we were talking about, PlayStation 5 and, Xbox Sex, that I like to call it, Series X. I just call it Xbox Sex. Last week, if you would have told me what side was I picking, I would have told you I wasn't picking a side, that I was going to wait a year and get both. But I wasn't terribly excited. And then the whole Obsidian Bethesda thing. And if you know me well, you know how much I love the Fallout series and how disappointed I was at Fallout 76, because I'm not really a proponent of online gaming. I'm not like a huge online gamer. I like to play by myself. So I'm like, just the thought of possibly Fallout New Vegas 2. Oh, and that, or Outer Worlds 2
Outer
on.
Worlds is dope, man. It's such a good
It's
game.
so dope. Even on the Switch's hardware, it's still so much fun because the story is so goddamn good, and it's written so well. So I'm totally looking forward to next gen. I have an RG 350, so I play old stuff all the time. I try and play at least one new game that I have never experienced before every single day. Every single day, even if it's for 5 minutes, and especially, like, it's funny, I try to play like really obscure adventure games, really obscure wrestling games, shit like that. And I just try and make it as fun as possible. Like, I don't, people, everyone thinks that, like, I know so much about, like, every single game that's ever come out, and that's not true. But what I do that's different from other people is I try and educate myself about games that I don't know every single day. So, it's like I've had people, like, I've been on their podcast before, and they get like this huge rush when they stump me. And I'm just like, I'm not like Ben Stein. I don't know everything about everything, I try and like model myself after like someone like Socrates. The smartest person is the one who's willing to admit that they know nothing, So it's like, if you stump me on a game that I've written about, then you're good, But it's like, of course there's going to be games that I don't know. So like, to fully like answer your question, like, my future, I definitely plan on doing more Minds Behind the Games books. I've spoken to a whole bunch of people and kind of gotten like a forecast, like kind of like gauge the temperature of the water. And I think an indie game book would be super important right now. A Minds Behind the
100%.
Indie Games book. I also think that A Minds Behind the Sony PlayStation 2 would be very important. So those are two things that I'm thinking about. But I've also had a lot of opportunities writing in the video game industry over the past like 6 months, and I'd be dumb to not explore that further. So like this year and towards the beginning of 2021, there's going to be at least 3 games that I have credit in some way, shape, or form as a voice actor, writer, or an editor. And there's a possibility of being a lot more than that too. There's like NDAs, there's things that I can't discuss now. And I'm working with and talking with publishers and people that I never thought in my wildest dreams 4 or 5 years ago that I'd ever talk to about me doing the things that I'm doing now. But I know that like the reason why all of this is happening is because of the minds behind the games. So I feel like I could never stop doing that. But then at the same time, by next year, I'll have 6 books out and I will have written 6 books in 3.5 years. I'm far from burnt out. I'm not burnt out at all. I love
Well,
this. I
you're
write.
in a flow too. Like there's something to be said for continuously doing something. Like one of the things that would always kill me is, if you're working and then you go on vacation and you come back to work and you're just like, I don't want to do this. Like you just kind of get out of that flow and you're just hitting such a stride at this point that I not to say that it's writing itself, because I obviously you're doing a ton of work, but your system is in place where
Yeah,
and it works, it's
absolutely.
proven. So like a lot of this stuff could be on a routine, just boom boom, okay, I got it. And you're super regimented. I don't know if you've ever been in some sort of military class or ROTC you're growing up, but you're super regimented. You're all about schedule and on time and organizing yourself to the point where it could probably be a little bit of a fault, I would imagine, a little bit, when it
Oh,
comes
yeah.
to like personal life and being able to like be
Oh, yeah.
flexible and stuff.
Absolutely. It's like, I mean, to get a little personal, it's just like, I mean, I'm the first college graduate in my family. I'm the first person in my family that's never done any drugs or alcohol. So it's kind of like, I realized a long time ago that if I wanted to do some of the things that I'm doing now, I would have to be extremely different from the people in my family. And I love them. I love them. And I will always support them. And I always be by their side when they need me, but I run my professional and personal life very different than they did, and do, and I think that's been like the reason why I've been so successful. But like, probably like 4 years ago, I just kind of realized that I was working really hard for other people, and I was making other people look a lot better than they really were, and I just said to myself, I'm gonna have a daughter soon, and it's my time to like take my piece of the cake. And I've just stayed that path, and it's like, I mean, people tell me all the time, they're like, do you have a clone? Like, do you sleep? And my answer is I don't have a clone, and I probably sleep like 5 hours a day, and I have an amazing wife that totally has my back and totally supports me and totally gets it, and we're a team, and I help her and she helps me. And we always make sure that we spend enough time with our kids. And we always make sure that we show our children love. And we always make sure that the animals are fed and the animals are taken care of and stuff. But it's just like, even a bad week, if I have the answers to chapters, I can bang out my work. I always make sure that by hook or crook, by the time Sunday comes, I have 95% of the stuff that I put on my to-do list on Monday done. So it's hard. But I get it done, and that's not going to stop. I mean, I could have another kid and it wouldn't stop. So I have a plan. I have things that I want to do, and I'm not going to stop until I do them. And once I got involved with the Padre as a story editor and then later as a voice actor, I got a taste of something that like that was just like, I mean, I've never done drugs before, but it was just like injected straight into my bloodstream. And I just wanted more. I
It's
wanted
that
to
rush,
continue to
man.
work. Yeah, I wanted to continue to work in the video game industry. And I'm not going to stop doing that. You know, I want to see where that goes. But at the same time, too, it's like, I mean, literally like 45 minutes before we went on, I had someone message me on Instagram, one of my followers on Instagram, and she's great. And we bullshit. She's into video games and stuff like that. And she bought my book. She didn't buy the new book. And she didn't buy the second book. She bought the first book. And the first book still freaking sells. Like, it's been almost 3 years. And I have people message me like every day that they're just like, oh, I didn't even know these books existed. So it's like what I was getting at before is like by next year I'll have six books out in the series, but it's like the first book is still going around like the ecosystem. So it's like I feel like I'm in a really good spot to build this because there's similar books that are out there, but they don't have a volume two. They don't have a volume three. And by next year they definitely won't have a volume six. So I feel like my legacy, even though I've been doing this for a while, I feel like my legacy is just starting to grow. And like 2 weeks ago, Harvard bought the first two books in the series, you know, so it's like I'm in like five Ivy League colleges already, you know, so just like we're just doing this, baby, you
One
know,
of
so I'm.
the things I want to touch on, because we've had your story about like why you started to get into this thing, and you touched on it a little bit here where you were tired of doing work for other people, making them look good. But one of the things I want to say and give you credit for is that you didn't take you took that attitude for yourself, but you didn't take that attitude towards others. So,
No,
like one of the things that I really admire about what you've been able to do is that you try and bring a rising tide raises all boats kind of scenario. You bring that to almost everything you touch, at least anything I've witnessed you touch. When you first came on this podcast, you opened so many doors to us to get people in games we didn't know that, oh, we'll never get them. We'll never be able to speak to Greg Johnson. Of Toe Jam and Earl, we'll never get him, and boom, we get him on the show. It was like a dream for me. It was like a fever dream. Michael Menheim and just get all that stuff. You really do take that approach, and do you have any regrets for taking that approach? Is there any time that where it just backfired on you, or is it just kind of you're just pushing through and things have just been going well in that aspect?
Oh my God, it's so funny that you actually brought that up because so I feel like I help people because it's the right thing to do. And I feel like if I help other people grow, then their voice is going to mean more than it does now. So when we interact again, my interactions with them will mean more. So it's just kind of like I would rather help 50 people with 1,000 followers than help one person with 50,000 followers. You know, and like in the case with you guys, like any opportunity that I have to help you guys, I would be willing to do. It's like Thornstone.
He's basically our EIC now.
I brought that guy into your fold, and like he was writing for me, and he was writing music, and he still writes music for me for ReviewFix.com, and he's super talented. But I knew that he wanted to write video games. And I knew that like I could only give him a couple of games a month to review, and I knew that you guys were looking for somebody. So that's what you do. Has it bitten me before? I mean, just like right before the show started, right after the person bought the book, I had another person. I noticed that like I lost like four followers on Instagram, and I'm kind of like, that never happens. Like, that's interesting.
I just blame the bots.
Yeah, well, that's, you know. That sometimes that happens, you know, but I'm just like, wow. So I run a group on Instagram called the Retro Game Mafia, and it's basically like 25 to 30 people where they're all collectors, some podcasters, all different types of people. Thorn is in there, and we talk about video games and we help promote each other and we get each other more followers. And whenever somebody does something, we help each other out. And one of the users, I know him for like 20 years. I break his balls a lot. Because he bitches a lot, like about everything. Just like he wakes up and it's just like, oh, another long day. And I'm just like, I try and manifest positivity all day, to the point where like some people get turned off by it because I'm just like, listen, you're having a bad day, but your attitude sucks, and that's gonna not help your day. you got to change your attitude. You got to be positive. You got to manifest positivity. You got to manifest success. What can you do right now to change your mood? What can you do now to advance yourself? And some people like it and some people don't. So to make a long story short, this guy had like four accounts on Instagram, four different accounts, and he unfollowed me on all four. So I was kind of like, okay. So I went to all four of his accounts and I blocked him. So it's kind of like, you unfollow me. I don't want you to starve. And I repeat this. I don't want you to starve, but you don't get to eat at my table anymore. Well, if you want me to help you, I will help you. I will be there. I will tell you things that you don't want to hear sometimes. I will be an asshole sometimes, but I will be your asshole, and I won't let anyone else treat you like an asshole. So that's the thing. That's the type of relationship I have. You know,
absolutely, 100%. You know, it seems like, you know, the rising tide was rising, but he was driving a submarine. Really, it was like what was happening.
You know, so it's just like, If you can't take someone breaking your balls, then I mean, I've had my balls broken so many times. It's like I tell people too. Sometimes, like when I have to eat shit, I get a piece of panini, and I get some Nutella, and I put some Nutella on that shit. And it tastes wonderful, and I eat it and I swallow it with a smile on my face, because I know I'm not going to be eating shit forever, and when it's somebody else's turn to eat shit, we'll see how they handle it if they have a smile on their face when they do it, you know. So yeah, stuff like that happens to me all the time. Like I've had people, like with ReviewFix, with the site that I own, people that I've given opportunities that they would have never gotten anywhere else, to cover film festivals, to do this, to do that. I've gotten them tons of free comics and free games. And then it's just like, all of a sudden they stop answering emails, or they got like, this happened to me with Destiny 2. I gave somebody a review copy of Destiny 2, like 3 weeks before release. And they just disappeared. And then I had to contact the press person, which thankfully I was very tight with. And I was like, dude, my guy just like disappeared. I'm like, can you send me a DLC code? And he was like, oh shit, really? I'm like, yeah. So he gave me a DLC code and I gave it to another writer, and the other writer covered it. Stuff like that happens all the time. So you just got to kind of like roll with the punches.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's hard.
It's also, you know, us Brooklyn kids, we're used to that kind of shit. We're used to just, you know, it's kind of dog eat dog, but at the same time, you make your little pack, you know, you make your little running pack. And
absolutely. And that's why I just tell people sometimes, like, if you feel like that this relationship isn't for you, just say thank you. It's like WWE when they fire somebody. What do they say?
We wish them good luck
on your future endeavors. Not fuck you, asshole. Don't ever work for us again. Like Ultimate Warrior basically held up Vince McMahon for like $1 million before SummerSlam, and then like 5 years later is working for them again. Why? Because Vince McMahon was like, you know what, I can still make money with this guy, which he didn't, but he thought he could. So I have the same type of frame of mind. Like if you screw me over, like if this guy on Instagram messages me tomorrow and it's like, yo, listen, I'm really sorry, I fucked up, blah, 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 I'll be like, all right, I'm not going to follow him again, but I may like one of his posts from time to time. Or if he asks a question on Twitter or this place or that place, will I chime in? Sure. But like I said, you don't get to eat at my table anymore. So it's hard, but that's kind of like the way it is. And I think a lot of people are like that. It's just they don't voice it. And I'm very transparent in my interactions with people. And that either works out to my benefit, or people like, oh man, you're a dick. And I'm like, no, I'm just straight ahead. I don't have time to waste. And that's the thing too. You said this before, like my time is very regimented, and it's like, I don't have time to waste on that shit. So if you're going to unfollow me, or if you're not going to do what you have to do, then I'm going to find somebody else that can do it, or I'm going to do it myself and I'm going to move on, and that's it. You know? So it's hard, but it's happened before with developers, you know. I've had developers like that I've worked with on certain books give me great stuff, and then when I go back to them to talk to them again, they'll like disappear.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, wow, that sucks. Like I didn't deserve that, you know. And then they'll have a game come out, and then they'll be like, oh, can you do me a favor? Can you share this on your Facebook or your Twitter? And I'll do it, and I'll be nice, but I'm never going to ask them for anything ever again.
Sure.
You know, I'm never going to ask them to be interviewed for another book. You know, so that's what you have to do. You just have to be smart, and you can't make anything personal, and you've got to just kind of like let things. You got to let things go. Like I get angry now over stupid stuff, like, you know, like my dog chewing up something, you know, but I don't get mad at like a coworker playing the political games or like a source dropping the ball, because those are just things that like are beyond my control. If like you
Sure,
want to be an asshole, then you can be an asshole, but you can be an asshole away from me, you know. Or if like that happens online or this and that, then I just whatever, and I just stay focused on what I have to do. And what I feel I have to do is I have to continue to tell other people's stories, and then I have to find a way to continue to contribute my stories. You know,
right.
that's like every day.
Speaking of
That's
your
like bread.
stories, let's get into this book. Let's get into the minds behind the sports games, because you have
All
some,
right.
you're covering some of the games that like defined my childhood here. We're talking
Well,
about,
we're both old, so yeah.
yeah, I know, I know.
We're getting old, man.
You start the book off with a bang. Now, obviously, I don't want you to give away everything, but why don't we highlight some of your the biggest chapters you think your home runs, as it were, pun intended, I guess.
Sure.
You
Absolutely.
got Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, which unbelievably, that story is. You didn't think that there could be that story, these kinds of stories behind these games, you know, when you're a kid growing up. But, you know, the whole story that unfolded there is all about how it's a new console. It's the first time it's on a, they're working with the new console, and like PlayStation 2, what are the challenges? And not the PlayStation 2 is so much more powerful and could do so much more that they literally had to rewrite a game that they made two of already, and they had, and that's kind of like the whole struggle that they have, and it's totally fascinating. What other little tidbits can you tell the listeners about in the book?
Well, in the book, or you want to focus on that chapter?
No,
Do you want
just pick, let's pick
to?
around.
Okay,
Let's cherry pick
sure,
around. Like I'm sure there are like little things. You don't want to give everything away,
sure,
but you know,
sure,
little
absolutely.
tidbits.
So, like in the case of Tony Hawk 3, again, you nailed it. It's like you think, oh, this is the third game in the series, like everything should be perfect,
Right.
and the thing is, not necessarily, because they've got new hardware to deal with, and then you have like, you know, Aaron Camerota, who worked on level design for the first two games, and he's got to learn all new hardware. And that was, it wasn't a necessarily a struggle, but it was a learning process for him,
Right.
and it wasn't easy. And this is a super talented developer that was at, you know, Activision for quite some time and had a lot of responsibility, and he worked on games like Apocalypse and Pitfall 3D. So this, the PS2 proved to be quite a challenge for him. So that was like a fun story of like a developer having to adapt to like a new console. In the case of a game like SSX, another like
Such a great game.
wonderful like extreme sports game, this was a game that was originally going to come out on like PS1 and then got changed to be like a launch title on the PS2 and on the in Japan. And then it got changed to be a launch title on the North American PS2, and it just kept getting delayed and changed and altered and fine-tuned until it eventually came out, and it came out at the exact right time. And it's like, if it would have been a PS1 game, it would have been towards the end of the PS1 life cycle, and it might have totally been bypassed. There are some great games that came out at the end of the PS1 life cycle that just kind of got like lost forever, and I love a lot of those games, like C12, Final Resistance, and stuff like that. Like the last Siphon Filter that came out on PS1 was really solid too, and people tend to like forget about it because like PS2 is already becoming a thing. So that was a fun story. One of my favorite stories in the entire book is WCW NWO Revenge, and just the whole story of how Sanders Keel, the producer, was playing virtual pro wrestling on the PlayStation, the Japanese version, and was like, this is really cool. We need to bring this to the United States. So then he ends up speaking to THQ, and they get a deal with WCW, and this all happens like super fast. And that becomes like WCW versus the world on the PlayStation, which to me, despite the fact that it's a little slow compared to like SmackDown, the SmackDown games, it's to me, it's the best wrestling game on the PS1. You know, my opinion could mean a lot to you. It could mean a little, but to me, it's the best wrestling sim on the PlayStation 1. And then Aki, which was then known as the Man Breeze. That was the name of the company. They were like, we don't ever want to release another game on the PlayStation. Like, we're done with the PlayStation. And then that's how you get WCW versus NWO World Tour,
World Tour, yeah.
you know, and then you get Revenge, and then you get WrestleMania 2000, and then you get No Mercy. So it's just like, if it wasn't for Sanders Keel playing these obscure Japanese wrestling games and saying, you know what, we could reskin this and bring this to the United States, we wouldn't have had some of the greatest wrestling games of all time. So getting the chance to talk to Sanders, and I consider him a friend now. I love him. I think he's such a great man. He's such a nice man. Being able to hear that story, was awesome. You know, and to hear like that there were like legal conflicts which kept Ric Flair out of WCW NWO Revenge, and how they were super close to getting Brian Clark, aka Wrath, in the game, and they took him out, but he's still available as like a Game Shark, you know, code, and
I
all,
remember that, yeah.
yeah, and all of these cool things, and like the inner workings of what it was like to work like on a WCW game, and how all of a sudden like Revenge is the best selling wrestling game on the Nintendo 64. A lot of people don't know that,
That game is
but
incredible.
it sold more than No
No
Mercy and
mercy.
WrestleMania 2000. And I love Revenge, but like No Mercy is the best version, obviously, because you've got that huge create a wrestler function, which is great, and then you've got like the running grapple, and just everything is fine tuned. But like there was something special about Revenge, and like Revenge is selling millions of copies. And then all of a sudden, WCW signs with EA.
Now, that's a story I really want to hear. Like, why would they do that? It seems like, you got the golden goose, right? You got it, and maybe it was just because they wanted to go on multiple platforms or whatever. Like, you think
Well, see, the thing is, too,
they didn't.
THQ was making the WCW games on PlayStation as well, like Nitro and Thunder, which aren't
Weren't
nearly
that
as
great.
good, but they sold. They sold well, you know, and people played them. And the thing is, like, Sanders was basically like, we found out. And like at the time, WCW was ahead in the ratings and things like that. And it was just like WCW jumped ship. They go to EA to develop their games. And then for like a month or so, THQ was like, what the hell are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, WWF started to rise in the ratings, and they started to win. And then they reached out to WWF, and WWF left a claim. And now all of a sudden, now THQ is back with the top wrestling promotion in the world. And then that's how you get WWF WrestleMania 2000. And he talked a little bit how it was different working for the WWF than it was for WCW. So that was a great story, you know. Another fun story, RBI Baseball on the NES. How, I mean, I didn't
Got it
know
somewhere
this
up
like
there.
right away, but it's like that's basically like a reskinned Japanese baseball game, you know, Pro Yaku Stadium. And then what they did is they put all the American players in it and stuff like that. And but Atari was super smart. They saw a game that was really good in the arcade, and they ported it over to the American arcades, and then they ported it over to the NES. And Peter Lipson, the programmer, ended up traveling to Japan a bunch of times, and he tells a story of like what it was like to be in Japan and talk to Namco about it, and go through like the whole process of porting it, and like how he put his stamp on the game. So that was a lot of fun. The best story, though, and if this doesn't sell the book, if you don't want to go buy the book after this, then you're a communist, and there's like nothing that I
You
could do to.
commies.
Yeah. Man, I'll never forget this. I'm sitting in a hotel lobby with Michael Brook, who was the associate producer on the original Madden on Sega Genesis, on Earl Weaver Baseball. He was one of the co-creators of NHL Hockey, NHLPA 93, NHL 94, NHL 95. And he told me a story of how Madden as we know it became Madden. And so the original Madden football was created by Trip Hawkins, who's the father of EA and later the father and CEO of the 3DO company, and a developer by the name of Robin Antonick. They came out on PC. They weren't well reviewed. They didn't sell well. John Madden saw John Madden Football on the PC, while it was in development and actually called it an abortion. Because they didn't have the right amount of players on the field, because the PC just couldn't handle that many sprites on the field at once, and
Jeez.
it paled in comparison to like what football games are now. Obviously, we're talking like 1988, 1989, and stuff like that, you know? So Michael Brook is on a team that's developing like an arcade style football game that is inspired by Tecmo Bowl and Cyber Bowl. And they were going to call it like Electronic Arts, like arcade football. So what happens is like EA now is losing money because they're paying John Madden a ridiculous fee to be the face of this game. So now EA comes across and they see this football game in development, and they're like, what if we get John Madden to agree to a lower royalty if we can convince him to put his name on this game and kill the other Madden game? So they do that. They show him this arcade football game, and they're like, this game is going to sell a lot better. And even though you're going to take less of a royalty, we can make more money on this. And he agrees. So they're like, wow, we might be able to like get out of the black. They're like, if we could sell 40,000 copies of this, that would be awesome. So now this is the thing. Like now we're talking like this is 1990, 1991. And for a game to be a mega hit, it needs to have like a 10% market share, meaning it's got to be in one of 10 homes, you know? So in like 1990, there's like roughly like 400,000 Genesis systems out at the time. So they're like, if we could sell 40,000 copies, we would be able to get back in the black and we can continue to make games. So now, this is another little side story. EA, if you guys remember, EA's cartridges look different.
They got the little extra little battery or whatever it is in them.
And it's because EA was mega smart. They had a bunch of great developers that reverse engineered the Sega Genesis, and they reverse engineered the Nintendo Entertainment System, and they produced their own cartridges. And they saved a ton of money producing their own cartridges. At the same time, their games were good enough that like Sega and Nintendo gave them the seal of approval. These weren't just like these weren't unlicensed games. You know, Sega and Nintendo absolutely appreciated the hard work that EA did, because EA before this was a dedicated PC
PCs,
and an Amiga developer. So they weren't just like some bullshit company. So what happens is now Madden has to get approved by Sega to be released on the Sega Genesis. So now Sega plays it, and Sega's pissed about the reverse engineering thing. They are pissed. And they're like, listen, we're willing to squash this court case if you give us this football game. Because we have a football game that we're going to release that, by comparison, is basura, is garbage. And that football game was John Madden. Oh, it was Joe Montana football.
Sports talk or regular?
The first one.
Because sports talk was dope. I like sports talk growing up. I had that game. That was game cool.
So what happens is like the producer for the game is out on vacation. Because at EA, if you work there for like 7 weeks, you got like 7 weeks sabbatical. So now Michael Brook is the assistant producer. So now he's in the meeting, the phone conversation with like Trip Hawkins and Sega. So they end up brokering a deal where Michael Brook and the rest of the team are going to fix Joe Montana football,
Jesus.
but maintain the rights to Madden. This is how smart EA was back then. So now they have the task of making sure that they make this game better so Sega's happy, but not making it better than the game that they need to sell 40,000 copies of.
They're going to come out at the
So,
same time?
and they're going to come out at the same time. So now EA has control over like the entire marketplace. So now this is the thing. Now they're developing Joe Montana football, and what happens is Sega fires the entire Joe Montana team.
Right.
So now this is completely an Electronic Arts production, but Electronic Arts is not going to get any credit on this. So while they're developing the game, they put in an instant replay function. which isn't in Madden. And they quickly realize, holy shit, this is really cool. We shouldn't have done this. But Sega knows already. Fuck, we shouldn't have done this. So now they're getting ready to release. You know, Sega's like, you know, how is development coming? Because they were like days away from submitting like the ROM. So Brooke and the rest of EA are like, you know, it's going good. We're really happy with the game, and you know, we really think that you'll like it. But there's like this one thing. We tried to put in an instant replay system, and it's just not ready yet, and it's probably not going to be ready in time. And like, we hate to take it out, but we think if we take it out, then we'd be finished. So Sega's like, yeah, take out the instant replay. Not a big deal. It went in the next Madden, you know? So that's like a really cool story that not a lot of people know. And I remember Michael Brook telling me this. I'm sitting like literally like 5 feet away from him. This is before social distancing. So like we were, you know, we were close to each other. And I'm just like, have you told this story to anybody before? And he's just like, you know, Trip Hawkins told it like a couple of years ago to like to a magazine, but he goes, I can't find it online. And then like I remember running like home, and I was searching on my phone for it, and I was just like, I couldn't find it. And then I went home and I did like a super deep Google search, and I couldn't find it anywhere. So then I was just like, this is going to be in the book. This is crazy. You know, so that was like, that's probably like my favorite story from the minds behind the sports games. How like EA gets shit on so bad now, like so bad. But like the founding fathers of EA Sports, I would, if I could start a video game company from scratch, and I could, because none of those, most of those guys don't work in the video game industry anymore.
Right.
Michael Brook is doing really cool iPhone games now, like trivia and stuff like that. I love it. Like, it's like Buddy Words Sports. It's so much fun. It's free. I downloaded it a couple of weeks ago. I gave it a 5-star review. I loved it. But I'm like Don Traeger and a lot of these other guys. They're not in video games anymore. And if somebody gave me like, you know, $100 million. And it was like, you could start a video game company and you could pick your people. I would totally hire these guys because they were just so ahead of their time and so smart. And they're the reason why EA exists to this day, because some of the business decisions that they made were just so smart and so ahead of their time. So again, it's so easy for people to shit on EA because of the microtransactions in Star Wars and this and that. And, you know, some people don't like that, like Madden hasn't like really changed too much in the last couple of years, but this is like one of the most important video game companies in the history of the video game industry. And I'm super happy to have interviewed so many of the founding fathers of that company.
Awesome. All right, folks. So that is the minds behind the sports games. Patrick, where can everybody pick this up before we get into our quicker? We're gonna end the show, but I'm gonna do a quick little segment for you that I think is gonna be a little fun. But I want you to pitch everybody the book. Where can they find it?
Awesome, and I apologize for being so long-winded.
No, this is great. This is real. I know what we're getting into when we get you on the show.
I'm so sorry. So the book is available like wherever fine books are sold digitally. Barnes and Noble, Amazon, Target, Walmart, Books a Million, Indigo, like wherever you want to buy a book digitally, you can buy it in physical and in digital format. It's on Kindle, it's on, you know, Nook, it's on everything. However, the best place to buy the book is patrickhickeyjr.com/books. What happens then is I sign your book. I write something in your book. I slip goodies in your book. It allows me to have a connection with you. The person that bought my book before the show started, she's from Canada. So I'm going to put some like 1988, 1989 like hockey cards in her book and stuff like that. And then like last year I got a card in the Walter Day video game superstar set. So I'm gonna sign one of those cards and put it in a book. So like I do whatever I can to make people's experience with me as intimate and cool as possible. So yeah, so if you want to buy the book and if you want to support me the most, that's the best place to do it. So patrickhickeyjr.com/books.
Awesome. All right. So usually we do like a little rapid fire thing to end the show, but we've done that with you before. So I want to do something a little bit different. And this is going to be a good idea, bad idea, the
Good
minds behind
idea.
the games. Exactly.
Sure.
So I'm
Absolutely.
going to give you minds behind the game titles, and you're going to tell me if it's a good idea or a bad
Okay.
idea. And now I wrote only four down, so I'm going to come
This is
up with
going to be
some
great.
on the fly.
Okay.
These first two are tied together. The minds behind the games of 1983.
Whew. I think it's a good idea.
Right?
There's definitely some games there for multiple consoles. So you're talking like the video game crash of North America. But at the same time too, 1983, you've got some great arcade games that have come out. So you've got some console games, some arcade games, some I'm sure there's definitely some killer like old school PC games that came out that time. So that would be a totally cool idea. I like that. And that was the
And
year I was born too, so I would totally love to do that.
awesome. And then the follow-up would be almost like a two-parter, the games of 1985, when Nintendo came in and kind of brought, 85, 86, where they kind of brought gaming back to North America. Thought
Sure.
that would be
Yeah. I think that would be a great story too. And also just like being able to tell the story of how Nintendo came to America, how like the NES was originally going to be, subcontracted through Atari, like that would be a great story. And there would be definitely some opportunities to talk to some amazing people. So that could be super cool.
The minds behind the game starring celebrities.
That'd be pretty cool. I definitely tell some of those stories. It's like in the minds behind the shooter games, we talk about like the Chronicles of Riddick and
Nice.
how Vin Diesel thought he had a much bigger role in the game than he actually did. And we talk about Apocalypse with Bruce
Apocalypse is
Willis
awesome. I love Apocalypse.
for in the minds behind the PlayStation games. And we talk about how like, yeah, Bruce Willis, like his face was in the game and that was like a main selling point, but didn't really have any impact on the game. One of the greatest stories, and I didn't get into this in the minds behind the sports games, but like Kelly Slater's Pro Surfer, how Kelly Slater like was he drew some of the waves that ended up in the game. Like he understood the water so much that he sat down with the artist and they worked on like designing the way the waves would flow in the game.
That's so
So
cool.
you could have like both the positive and the negatives of that. That would be really cool. So I would definitely have to like reprint that chapter in that book. So that's a good idea. You're good at this. You're good, yo.
The minds behind the licensed games. Now, licensed properties, they could go, they used to be the game, but then you got your LJNs that were crapping out those games left and right. But
And the thing is though too, I would love, because there's a couple of really good LJN games.
yeah, oh,
Like
absolutely, 100%, yeah.
Maximum Carnage is an LJN game. And I think Maximum Carnage is a really good, side scrolling beat 'em up with some, and they wanted to do so much more with that game that they couldn't, that they were limited by the technology. But Minds Behind the License games would be really cool. Sure. Good idea.
Good idea, bad idea.
Good idea, Ben. So you're on a roll so far.
This is good, but I wanted to get a little obscure with it, but I ran out of time writing up my questions because I literally came up with this idea right when you came on for the interview. I was like, oh, that'd be a pretty cool segment. Let's think here. The minds behind the games in space. Now you're getting a little genre specific.
But then too, at the same time, you could have like a space opera like Mass Effect. You could have like the Outer Worlds,
Dead
but
Space
Dead Space.
Invaders,
I was
kind
just gonna
of.
say, could we consider like Yars Revenge and like Space Invaders
I
and all of
think
those, like,
absolutely. Absolutely.
so that could be cool.
Asteroids, probably.
Asteroids, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a
That'd be
good
dope.
idea. Sure.
The minds behind the massively multiplayer online only RPG, or also known as the MMORPG.
Absolutely. They've had just like a huge effect on the video game industry past like 20 years. And it's like, I mean, that would be a fun adventure for me because like if it would be anything like the journey from the minds behind the shooter games, because like shooters are not my preferred genre. I don't particularly care for first person shooter games, but through doing the book, I ended up with such a great appreciation for it. I ended up playing so many first person shooter games that now, when Doom Eternal came out, I was like, yeah, I have to play this. And my friends are like, really? Like, I thought you didn't like Doom. I'm like, I respected Doom before, but now I really like appreciate Doom. So if that could kind of get me to like appreciate those games a little bit more, I mean, the story of EverQuest would be hard to tell because like the creator has passed away. And like, I mean, if you did that book, you'd have to get in EverQuest. But there's a lot of great massively multiplayer. I mean, and even like a game like Maple Story, where like people totally like don't understand the impact a game like Maple Story has had, you know? That would be a fun book. So yeah, I'm gonna say good idea.
The minds behind the flops.
You
Now
could do
that
like the minds behind the game's flop edition, you know? Sure. It's just like you got to kind of think about it like
How do
every
you
chapter would.
approach it where you're not insulting them?
How you're not it, because that's the thing. I try and keep as much opinion out as possible. So that would be hard. I mean, it would still be interesting, and it would still be interesting because if I could find out why they think each game flopped, and if I could find a different reason for each chapter, then it would be really
Yeah,
cool. It would be a lot of
that would be a tough one to tiptoe, I feel like. It's a little bit of a minefield. The minds behind the gaming peripherals.
I
I feel
think that
like,
would get like it would get really techy,
yeah.
and I think like there might not be enough. Like it's like,
Like
could you talk?
I want to know about the Game Genie, the Game Shark, and Mad Catz this, and like, I don't know. Like, there's so many stories out there of like, why does this exist, and why did everybody fucking have one? Everybody had one of these Game Genies where you just slap your cartridge on top of it and all this stuff. It's
Oh yeah, and why don't they exist anymore? You know? That would be cool. I think that would be better as like a magazine series or like maybe like a YouTube series. I just
Just
think like it might get too, if it depends on who you would speak to, but it would have like the possibility of getting too techy. You would
Yeah, you
have to
would
be
probably have to
super
get like a
careful.
PR person that like did like the ad campaign or like something like you would have to get like marketing or like maybe not such an R&D type person, but more of like the forward face of and a lot of these thing companies I'm sure don't even exist at this point. Like does the who was it Gloob or whatever made the like
Yeah,
this
Galoob.
thing Gloob.
That's
All
like
right.
the worst name for a company.
Patrick, that's going to do it for us here
Sure.
on the Dual Screens podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, folks. If you like this, then you might like the show that Andy and I do every single Monday, which is a cool called the Dual Screens Games Cast, where we talk all about gaming news. We bring some stories to the table. We debate on the topics, and it's an overall great time. If you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producers FNH Paul and Colton the Apprentice Nestler. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. And if you head there and you just support us with for $1 a month, $1 a month gets you a bonus episode every single month. It gets you to vote on the topic of that bonus episode. And you also get invited into our VIP Discord channel. So you could talk games with us, with each other, and also we have a bunch of indie dev guests that go in there as well and like to chat about when they're on the show or the games that they have coming out or anything like that. So it's a really cool place to kind of hang out. Patrick, this was awesome, and it's always a pleasure having you here. I can't wait for your next and it seems like it's coming up soon, so we might have you back here just in time for the holiday season.
Yeah, that would be great. I would never turn down an opportunity to chat with you guys. And I haven't talked to Andy in a while, so that would be
Yeah,
good times.
that'd be dope. That'd be dope. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, every viewers. And as always, please be excellent.